Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Well, thank you all for joining us. I am here with Dr. Janae Khaldun at the Capitol Ceremonial Office. Since Monday, We've taken a number of actions. We've received 400 ventilators from the Strategic National Stockpile on Tuesday. I spoke with the president that day as well, and he said more are on the way, and that is great. We are grateful, but we still need a lot more. We recently announced that Detroit will be one of the first cities in America to receive 5 testing machines and 5,000 kits from Abbott Labs. The mayor acknowledged that yesterday. These tests will be used to test police and fire, EMS, and DDOT workers. The technology produces results in 15 minutes, and that's fantastic. Each machine does one sample at a time, so Detroit will have the capacity to do about 20 to 50 results per hour, and that's why it's got to be focused on our frontline providers. On Monday, President Trump granted my request for a formal mission assignment to allocate and order up to 3,000 members of the Michigan Army and Air National Guard for up to 90 days to perform humanitarian missions across the state. Our National Guardsmen and women will do things like help run mobile screening facilities, distribute food and medical supplies,
ensure resiliency in supply lines, disinfect public spaces, and support public safety when required. Executive orders. I have formally declared a state of disaster and sent a letter to Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey and House Speaker Lee Chatfield requesting a concurrent resolution extending the state of emergency and disaster by 70 days. We have suspended the April 1st requirement for lower vapor pressure gasoline. We have placed a temporary restriction on non-essential veterinary procedures during the COVID-19 pandemic. Businesses have stepped up and we are grateful. The big three all are working on one or more of the following: face shields, respirators, masks, as well as ventilators. The Greektown Casino has stepped up and is putting first responders up so that they don't have to worry about spreading the disease to their families. And that's a wonderful thing that they're doing to support the front line in Detroit. Delta Airlines is providing free flights for medical professionals to travel to areas that need help. And we know that Michigan is one of those areas, and we're grateful for their partnership. Magnum Tools in Romulus is making countertop sneeze guards for businesses in the area to protect employees and patrons. Great Lakes Wine and Spirits is beginning working with local restaurants to send 2 meals a week home for their employees and their families. And High Velocity Sports in Canton will offer a drive-through free lunch for anyone in need on weekdays. We are grateful that so many Michigan businesses are doing their part, large and small businesses alike. We've updated our numbers daily. As of yesterday at 3 o'clock, we had 9,334 cases, 337 deaths. I think it's incumbent on every one of us to remember that each of those people was a Michigander with a story, with a family and friends who can't mourn them as we traditionally would because we can't congregate. And it's important for us to remember this. This is what's at stake, Michigan lives. Michigan is a hotspot for COVID-19 cases. We're on the upswing. Our numbers continue to climb every day. We found nearly 3,000 more positive cases since I sat last in this chair on Monday. We know that the apex is probably not end of April, beginning of May. We're a month will hit the height of this. I need to reiterate every time I address you that no one is immune from this virus. People of all ages and all walks of life are testing positive across our state every single day. This virus moves easily from person to person. Even if you don't feel sick, you could be carrying it. I was struck by one of the stories I saw on the news just this morning of a special education teacher who's 30 years old who passed away after 3 days of combating the symptoms of COVID-19. His wife had it as well and hardly had a fever. Each of us responds differently to this disease, and that's why we all must act as though we could be carrying it and stay home. Just one person with this virus can infect another 40, and then in turn, they can infect thousands more. We must do everything we can to protect our families, our communities, our dedicated health professionals, and everyone on the front line. COVID-19 will touch every one of our lives in some way or another, so we all must do our part. Today, I'm signing an executive order to close school buildings to students for the remainder of the calendar year, the school calendar year. All in-person instruction for K-12 students will be suspended, and all school buildings will be closed for the remainder of this school year. This doesn't mean our kids will stop learning. Each district must develop an alternative learning plan for students to continue their education during this time. Plans will be different based on district. The plans will be locally driven and reflect the best interests of the kids in their communities. That means learning by phone or mail or online. That means project-based learning and paper packets, telephone lessons, and things that can be used as means of alternative mode of delivering instruction. Districts must make sure that their plans are appropriate and accessible for families in their schools. If the plan relies on some online instruction, the district should ensure that every student has access to an appropriate device with an ability to connect to the internet. Students and families will not be punished if they are unable to participate in their alternate learning plan. My personal intent is to ensure and implore all districts to have a plan so that graduating seniors, this class of 2020, graduates on time. Our dedicated educators, teachers, secretaries, parapros, and custodial and cafeteria workers will be paid for the remainder of the school year. I know this is hard, and I know that this raises a lot of questions from parents to students. I was getting text messages from my own child before I came out here asking questions about how this is going to work. I know that there is a lot of anxiety about how we're going to move forward and meet the needs of our kids. I feel it too. As a parent of two high schoolers, both of whom are going to miss out on prom this year, and a senior who's asking the same questions about graduation, we feel it in our own household. But this is the best thing that we can do for the health of our children, for the tens of thousands of educators in Michigan who work in our schools. This will ensure more kids and educators will return to school happy and healthy at the start of next school year. It will protect more families from the spread of COVID-19, and it will help us return to life sooner. Over the past few weeks, we've seen teachers across our state step up and find creative ways to continue reaching their students, like Mrs. Wilson in St. John's, who wrote letters to her sixth grade class to let them know she's thinking of them. And the teachers at Holland Public Schools, who are providing meals to families, hosting Zoom calls, and sending notes to their students. Like my friend Mrs. Johnson, who's at Plymouth Canton. She's a kindergarten teacher, and she and her colleagues drove through neighborhoods waving at students. Took them 2 hours, but they wanted to make sure students knew that they were there for them. And like Lauren from Stony Creek, who has created a virtual band room with her students, setting up time for them to collaborate with professional musicians. And Nora in Detroit, who makes daily video lessons for her kids, while her husband Lane, a district chef, is helping provide meals for families who need them. Our teachers' number one priority from Detroit to Holland to the Upper Peninsula is ensuring a great education and a healthy learning environment for our kids. Now, I know this will be tough, and it will require creativity and hard work and problem solving. But in my time in public service, I've met educators across our state who I know are eager to rise to this challenge. Our teachers are some of the hardest working people I know. I know that they will help guide our students through this tough time, and I will do everything in my power to support them and help guide them through this. I also want to take a moment to thank Michigan parents. Parents who have spent every day with their kids trying to keep them entertained and inspired, trying to keep them reading and working on math or science with them. Being a parent is one of the hardest and one of the best jobs there is. I'm grateful to those of you who continue to work from home and take care of your kids. I know it's hard, and when your kids get older, they will remember these days when they got to spend a little more time with their parents. They'll remember the activities that you did together. They will be grateful, ultimately, that we all pulled together to meet their needs. I'm imploring you also to make sure that as you're engaging with your kids, that you're educating them in an age-appropriate manner on how to learn about what is happening in our world right now and how to cope with it. These last few weeks have been tough for Michiganders. They've been tough for all Americans, but we know right here in Michigan, we have got a big challenge. Our families, our workers, and all of our mental health has been stretched. This is a challenge unlike anything we've ever faced before. I know many of you tune in every week hoping for some good news, hoping I'll say something that shows we're ready to turn back to life as normal. I ask that until that day comes, you keep making smart choices. I ask that everyone who can volunteer in healthcare centers or donate blood or money to their local food bank or medical supplies, visit michigan.gov/fightcovid19. Stay home, stay safe, and every day that you do, we will get one step closer to the end. I want to thank the hardworking men and women in our grocery stores and the UFCW and Kroger and Meijer and the people that are making sure we've got food for our families. I want to thank the janitorial services across the state that are cleaning all of these environments so that when we are out, we're safer. And I want to thank the teachers and, of course, our nurses and doctors, respiratory therapists, and everyone in our healthcare system. And with that, I want to thank and turn it over to the person that I learned the most from, that I lean on the most, Dr. Janae Khaldun, our Chief Medical Executive.
Thank you, Governor Whitmer. COVID-19 in Michigan continues to be a true public health crisis. We're not sure of the exact date when cases are going to peak in the state, but as of right now, we know we are still on the upslope. We've identified more than 1,000 new cases each day over the past few days. As of yesterday, as the governor mentioned, Michigan had 9,334 cases and 337 deaths. We expect to announce more cases and more deaths later today. We've talked a lot about our goals when it comes to the public health strategy in Michigan. We do not have a vaccine and we don't have an antiviral treatment. Because of that, social distancing is really the one thing we must do and do very well to get ahead of this virus. We must prevent as many people as possible from getting the disease. We must protect our residents who are most vulnerable to becoming very ill, the elderly, and those who have underlying medical conditions. We also have to understand that no one is immune. There are people who are young. There are people who do not have underlying medical conditions, who are getting sick and are dying. We must heed the governor's executive order to stay home and stay safe. People must stay home if they are sick. We have evidence that even if you feel well, you could still be spreading the disease to others. Do not leave your house unless you absolutely must, and maintain social distancing while you are out. We also have to make sure our hospitals have the capacity to take care of the sick. We know that many of our hospitals on the front lines taking care of patients are at capacity right now. Intensive care units are full, hospitals are running low on masks and gowns, and if they have them, some are actually needing to reuse them between patients. We also know some hospitals are running low on critical medications like albuterol and sedation medications, medications that are necessary to help people breathe or to make sure they can be safely maintained on a ventilator while someone's body heals from the coronavirus. The state is working as hard as it can to support our hospitals. I've truly been humbled by the number of people who have reached out to help us get masks or to volunteer their services. Our colleagues in the federal government have been listening, and they've sent us some supplies, although we know it will not be enough. We will continue to work around the clock to get our hospitals the supplies that they need. We've also already identified the TCF Center in Detroit as a site for some patients who have COVID-19. Given the expected trajectory of COVID-19 in the state, we will likely need additional facilities. We will also need additional medical professionals, doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, physician assistants, and others to staff them. Please, if you have the skills and you are available, go to our website, www.michigan.gov/fightcovid19, to sign up. The next several weeks are going to be very difficult, some of the most difficult we've ever faced. I encourage everyone to take this seriously and to heed the governor's executive order to stay home and stay safe. And I'll turn it back over to you, Governor.
Okay, with that, happy to open it up for some questions.
Can you speak a little bit about how this decision was reached to close the schools? I know it's been several weeks that parents have been wondering when it was going to make a decision. So what was the deciding factor for you?
All right, I know you've got a microphone. I'm going to repeat questions. I've gotten feedback that it's hard for people to hear the questions. So how did we arrive at this decision on the school year? Not lightly, I'll tell you that. The decision to pull our kids out of school was made based in communication with our chief medical executive as we saw COVID-19 starting to spread across the country. We know that schools are places where kids congregate. They bring things from home and then they bring things back home. And so it was important that we pull our kids out. We've seen other states take actions to curtail the school year, but we wanted to make sure that before we made any pronouncements, we had a plan. And it was a plan that took into account that we've got 1.5 million children in Michigan in our pupil count, that we've got 56 ISDs across our state. We have over 900 school districts in the state of Michigan, and each has their own set of assets and their own set of challenges. And that's precisely why when a pronouncement was made that we'd taken all of these things into consideration, talking with our Michigan Department of Education, talking with our leaders in the legislature, both sides of the aisle, talking with our frontline educators who are the true experts here. This, we think now, is the right moment to say, here's how we anticipate moving forward to meet the needs of our kids. This is how we are empowering school districts. This is how we are leaving some of the restrictive things that people were grappling with. How do we cope with this? And this is how we can, as a state, start to move forward on individualized plans for districts so that they have the tools they need to meet the kids that they serve.
There are parents right now who are obviously home because they can't go because of the previous executive orders. But at some point, what happens when you have all the students who are out of school because the school buildings are closed, but parents now might be let back to go to work? How did that factor into your decision, and what do you anticipate going forward for that?
Well, at this juncture, we think we're probably a good month out from the apex of COVID-19, and this disease is spreading very fast here in Michigan. We still don't have enough tests to really have confidence in that we know precisely how many people are carrying COVID-19. That's why we've had to take such aggressive steps to mitigate the spread of this. With regard to whether or not there's a lag between when parents get back to work and when kids are back in the classroom, that's a very real possibility. But at this point in time, our decisions have to be made centered with what is in the best interest of the health of our kids and our families and our teachers. And that's precisely why we think that this is the right step now. If perchance it looks like the world can go back to normal before the end of this calendar year, that would be a great issue that we would have to confront. But at this point in time, the most responsible thing we can do is to move forward to work with ISDs and local districts to fashion a plan that meets the needs of the kids that they serve.
Governor, at least one of the legislature's Republican leaders has said that he's not ready to agree to your request for an extension of the executive order. Just what are your thoughts on that, and where do those discussions stand?
Well, a couple things. You know, Michigan is on the front end of taking aggressive steps. That is the smartest thing that we can do when we finally see other states following suit. That's good. They're a little bit late to the science and to the tough decisions that executives need to be making. But the fact of the matter is we are nowhere near the end of COVID-19 in the state of Michigan. As we've stated, as you look at modeling, we know that we are in for a tough 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks here in front of us. And so we are far from out of the emergency that we find ourselves in. We've got to retain every tool we can to combat COVID-19, to keep people safe. The legislature's insistence on coming in next week is something I implored them not to do. We've already lost a member of the legislature to suspected COVID-19. A person of the 110 member House has lost their lives already. I think that is very inadvisable for them to congregate and to start meeting. I think the best thing that we can do is to say this new order, they don't have to come back for at least 28 days, but let's make sure that when they do come back, we have an emergency extension for as long as 70 days if it's necessary. If it's not, great, but let's go the route that we need to protect people. This emergency powers are they've been used many times before. Not in a situation like this, I grant it, but in much less serious times, these emergency authorities have been extended much longer than 70 days. For a sinkhole, for instance, for the crisis in Flint, you know, this is a time where we have a unique crisis on our hands. People are dying in our state. It's important that we continue to have the protections for our healthcare workers, and that all depends on extending this emergency. And I ask that the legislature think very seriously about embracing this 70-day extension. It doesn't mean it's embracing a 70-day extension for every other order that I've issued. It simply means that we acknowledge that we are going to be in this emergency and we're going to need to have unique powers during this time to combat COVID-19 and to save lives.
Going back to the schools topic, a lot of parents are confused about what this means in terms of advancing their kids for the next year or not. I know you said it was important to get those graduating seniors through as well. So can you tell parents what their options are in terms of continuing this school year and then advancing to the next school year?
Yeah, so they will be working with their districts. This does not mean, you know, what we want to make sure is that no student is penalized because of COVID-19, that they are not held back because of this global crisis that we're confronting. And that's precisely why we're encouraging districts to put together their distance learning plans so that they are meeting the needs, acknowledging some of the challenges within these school districts so that every student has the ability to move on to the next grade. We also need to recognize that there will be some challenges and some additional needs this fall when school is resumed. And that's precisely why working with the legislature on the terms of this is important, because it lays the groundwork for the additional supports that we're going to need to give our kids as we think about resuming in the fall.
You mentioned the fall and coming back. If districts have different plans, they have different access. So you could have a district where most people have access to online education, have pretty high performing district. You also have districts where there aren't, the access just isn't there, whether it's rural or urban settings. Are you concerned about the gap that could be created in the next month or two, and then expanding on that in the fall, and what conversations need to be had about adjusting some of the standards for what third graders are supposed to know, what fifth graders are supposed to know when we get back?
Yeah, well, I appreciate the question. I mean, you're touching on precisely the challenge that we have with over 900 school districts across the state, with 56 ISDs, We know that whether you are in one part of our state or another, it can be vastly different access to resources, to broadband, to all of the kind of different challenges that districts have. They're not uniform. That's precisely why I've been for 2 years in a row pushing an equitable formula in our education budget. We recognize that districts do not have equitable access to all of these things, and that's why it's not one size fits all. It's got to be determined at the local level so that the needs of kids are met, acknowledging the unique challenges that districts are confronting in different parts of our state.
What are you thinking about in terms of a start date for the coming school year?
Well, I think, Rick, it's, you know, we are making decisions right here and now based on the best science and the best data that we can get our hands on. We need more testing. We need to be doing robust testing in order to really assess when and how it's safe to resume life. And that includes what school looks like in the fall. At this juncture, what we know is that it would be too dangerous to have our kids congregating in schools across the state right now. And that's going to be true for the foreseeable future. And that's why it is time to move forward with a distance learning plan for our children, because we acknowledge if we don't hit our apex until late April or mid-May, the school year is pretty much over at that juncture. And that's why we can't wait to see what happens. We've got to start making plans to meet the needs of our kids. So far as what the fall looks like, I don't think that we can with any certainty say we need to start precisely on this day. We are giving districts some flexibility, though. We have gotten rid of the standardized testing requirements. We have ensured that if they want to move to a balanced calendar, they have that ability to do that. We're going to need to work with the legislature to ensure that we've got additional resources to support the unique challenges that schools are going to want to meet and are going to need to be devising at the local level. And so I think that those are all factors that would go into, you know, answering your question. But I think that working with the people on the ground who are the true experts in education of their student bodies is how we proceed and get the best result for our kids.
We've had a lot of people on Facebook Live asking us about unemployment. We've heard that hundreds of thousands of people have been applying for it, trying to get through the system, but they're either not getting a response or just having a hard time getting that benefit, those assistance that they've been needing as a result of COVID-19. Can you give us an update on if there's going to be any changes to the system, if there will be an unemployment task force, anything to support the people of Michigan who have been affected by this?
Yeah, so each of these orders that I've issued, you know, I've said it before, and I think it's worth repeating, they weigh heavily on me. I know that there are a lot of people who are unemployed and the anxiety that comes with that, and trying to confront a state system that has been completely overwhelmed because there are so many people unemployed. It's not just here in Michigan, it's across the country. Our system's been able to stand up to the increased demand, but it does need additional support, and so we're working on that. In the interim, what we have done is release and loosen some of the previously required actions on behalf of applicants. So it used to be that you'd have to get a certain documentation from your former employer to even be eligible. We've said we're going to make it easier for people to apply. And so my encouragement for folks is that keep attempting to get that application in, but know that we understand the incredible strain on the system, the incredible number of people that are impacted, and we're going to work to make sure that people get the unemployment that they need to get through this crisis.
We're seeing questions about masks and whether people should be wearing masks when they're out in public. There are places now that are starting to require masks. Is there any consideration about making such a requirement here in Michigan?
I'm going to hand that one to Dr. Khaldun.
Sure. So there's no question right now that our frontline hospital workers don't have enough masks. So if there is an N95 mask or a surgical mask, we want it to go directly to our hospital partners. That said, we know that some people may have a mask at home, or they may be able to make a mask out of cloth or a bandana. And if they want to do that and they can, it's certainly they should strongly consider it. And it certainly won't cause any harm.
Has there been any consideration of a curfew, a statewide curfew?
We have not discussed a statewide curfew at this juncture. I will say that the exponential growth in COVID-19 is something that we're all very concerned about. We know that our hospital systems are at capacity in many parts of our state. We know that this great testing that was set up in the city of Detroit has shown that there's a much higher prevalence of COVID-19, I think, than anyone anticipated. The more testing we do, the better. We see numbers go up, and that is concerning for people, but the more testing we can do, the better handle we can get on how prevalent this is and make educated decisions. I know that the mayor of Flint went forward with a curfew this week. I know that that's being talked about at a variety of our sister states, but at this juncture, we've not had that conversation. But we're anticipating and analyzing each of the actions that other areas are taking to be aggressive and to be on the forefront. And so I would anticipate at some point a conversation about that, but there's not been one yet, and there's not a decision right now either.
Dr. Khaldun, we're still seeing lots of people congregating in public spaces that are still open despite the social distancing recommendations. Can you just reiterate the importance of continuing to social distance during this time and staying home if you can?
Absolutely. So the question is, people are still congregating. That's just absolutely just unacceptable. This is so incredibly important that people stay home. No one is immune. You can be 25 years old, healthy, no medical problems, you can easily get the coronavirus, and you could potentially die. I need everyone to understand this is incredibly serious. Take it seriously, stay home, and stay safe.
There are a number of students who have special needs, services that are provided through the schools, IEPs, et cetera. Can you talk a little bit about what you expect of districts to work with those students in the wide variety of services that they provide? Are there exemptions for delivery of those services?
So we recognize that there are a lot of students with special needs across Michigan, and we want districts to support students and their IEPs to the fullest extent that they are able. We recognize that there are unique challenges in a situation where you can't have person-to-person contact, and that is something that is an issue. You know, if a student needs occupational therapy services, it may require that additional sessions will be needed after the state of emergency is over, and we are mindful of that. And when this executive order expires, that is something that I think we will continue to work on. Those services are not canceled. They may need to be delayed until we beat this virus, but we anticipate living up to the IEPs that our students rely on and that our families rely on as well.
On the school year, what other options, if any, did you consider?
I don't know that there are a lot of other great options. I think the question was, how do we ensure that we're empowering districts to meet the challenges that they confront and make use of assets that they might have available? I think the biggest challenge, Rick, is that with the disparate, educational system that we've had in Michigan, that there are very different challenges across our state. And it's not just flipping a switch and saying everyone can go online, because broadband's just not available in areas. Not every child has access to a device. Not every school district has the ability to devise and instruct an online course that meets the needs of the kids. And so that's why this really has to be in close partnership with the local leadership to ensure that each child has access to the kind of distance learning that they're going to need. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.